When Walter Moody comes out of his apartment for the last time, one tenant is still standing under a shade tree, watching and sipping a beer. Moody is beneath a white sheet. Two of the professionals, one now has blood on the sleeve and pants of his light blue suit, are straining under the weight of the stretcher, their heels shuffling on the concrete. Once down the stairs, the body is gently placed on a wheeled stretcher and covered with a green velvet blanket. It's then wheeled to the white van. One of the body movers has blue tears tattooed at the corners of his eyes. Somehow, it seems appropriate. The people here can't let true sympathy get too much in the way of the work. At 7 p.m., the yellow plastic barricade tape police had strung across the entrance of the apartment building is taken down. The white van pulls away. The last of the police officers leave the scene. On the walkway outside the murder victim's apartment, the cops have left 5 empty coffee cups behind, and there are 36 cigarette butts crushed on the cement or dropped in the wood chips spread around the shrubs that Walter Moody had once planted and cared for. It's nearly 9 p.m. before the detectives are finished getting a composite of Troy from the witnesses and turning over the collected information to Russo and Allen, the case detectives. Russo and Allen have several leads. First check is a name that Mundy came up with on the police computer. It's a person being held in the county jail who gave Walter Moody's address as his own. It might be a former roommate and someone who may know Troy. As Hurt and the other detectives head home for the night, Russo and Allen decide to head to the jail to interview the prisoner. Russo first calls her daughter to say she won't be home until late. At home, George Hurt watches the first half of a New York Mets and St. Louis Cardinals baseball game on TV before falling asleep. But at 12:30 a.m., he's yanked out of it by the phone. The call. 15 minutes later, he's at 600 Southwest 12th Avenue, the corner of Riverside Park, looking at the face-down body of a man with a bullet hole in his back. Number 39. Wally and Chiani are also there, the partners who are up on the rotation. Van Zant is there, cigar in hand, as well as Dominguez and the crime scene detectives. Somebody asks if anybody knows if the Mets won. Somebody else starts an electric generator, and a spotlight bathes the body in a harsh white light. Above the grim proceedings, the detectives can see storm clouds forming. It will rain soon. They hurry. The detectives begin talking to witnesses and the two men who had been with the dead man when he was alive just minutes before. They get an idea of what happened. Michael Connable, 31, was walking with two friends down 6th Street towards the Riverside Pub. It was midnight dark, and a second group of three men were approaching from the opposite way. As the two groups passed, one of the men from Group 2 opened fire. The men of Group 1 began running. 50 yards later, Connable fell dead a few feet from the door of the Riverside Pub, his blood slowly seeping down an incline on the parking lot toward a storm drain.